Okay, everyone, welcome to the third edition of Truth Hurts Radio here on BBS Radio. the first week I discussed the 9/11 fiasco, provided evidence that it was in fact an inside job. And again, anybody has any doubt about that, you can go into the archives on bbsradio.com and listen to the show of 2 weeks ago. Or you can go, if you want more details, you can go to lulu.com, that's L-U-L-U.com, search for my name, Charles Giuliani, that's G-I-U-L-I-A-N-I, no relation to Rudy, of course, same spelling though, unfortunately, and searching for my name there, you'll see that book come up along with some others. I've got a book called The New World Disorder, also available there, which documents what I talked about last week, the bigger picture. How that, you know, 9/11 is just one link in a long chain of events like that, all leading us toward the same ultimate goal, which is global domination. So the book that gives a more broad perspective, I do talk about 9/11 in there as well, so obviously not to the same degree I do in the Piercing the Fog of 9/11 book, but I mention it in the context of, you know, so many other events like that that have been going on for quite a long time now, pretty much since this country was founded. And, you know, I talk about how this same cabal, the money powers working behind the scenes, the big corporate interests, the big banking interests, international banking interests, they've been handing on the torch from generation to generation, from father to son to grandson to great-grandson. And they've been slowly, insidiously gaining more and more control of this country and indeed many other countries around the world, working, collaborating together behind the scenes, bringing each country that they have control over more and more toward a world system of government, gradually, slowly, so the public has not been able to perceive what's been happening. They've gained control of their monetary system. I document all this in that book, The New World Disorder. They gained control of the education system to make sure the public was dumbed down, as well as the media. Even organized religion has been hijacked. They wanted to make sure they got control of all avenues of public information to prevent people from finding out what's happening. And all the while, they've been setting up things like the EU and the emerging North American Union, all designed to bring various nations together, either economically or politically or, you know, militarily. It doesn't really matter under what pretext it is, just to get them used to working together, so that ultimately they can take these regionalized unions and bring them all together under one banner and have one global cohesive unit, all centrally controlled, where the international money powers can exploit all the peoples of the entire planet and turn the whole planet into a giant slave camp. That's really their goal, folks. The third worldization of planet Earth. This is their goal. And their own documents attest to it. And again, this is all documented. I talked about it in depth last week, but it's all documented in the book, The New World Disorder. You want to know what's really going on behind the scenes. You want to be able to understand world events in their proper context. That book will provide that context. Unfortunately, after reading it, you will never be the same person again. You will never be able to look at the world the same way again. But the good news is you won't be fooled again. Once you see it for what it is, there's no question. There's absolutely no question anymore what's going on and why the things that are happening, the strange things, are happening. In continuing with that train of thought, today I want to discuss the Cold War. Understanding what the Cold War was really all about will help us to understand what the current war on terror is all about. Once we see the Cold War for what it was, we will be able to see the current war on terror for what it is. It's the same game, just a different name, just a different boogeyman, but the same kind of public manipulation game to sucker people to fighting phony wars that have nothing to do with their interest, nothing to do with bringing freedom and democracy, nothing to do with removing tyrants from power. Quite the opposite, in fact. All during the Cold War, the U.S. overthrew, in many cases, legitimately elected leaders that the bulk of the population of each country that we invaded was happy with. But it was not a leader that Washington, or should I say Wall Street, was happy with. They wanted to remove these people so they could put in their place dictators who would rule their people with an iron fist and yet do so in compliance with Washington's and Wall Street's policies. And all the while, through the propaganda machine here, they could assure the gullible American people that freedom and democracy has again triumphed, and we have again brought freedom to an oppressed people. You know, we removed their corrupt leader, when in reality, we removed leaders, again, that they were happy with, and installed in their place leaders that Washington was happy with, which would now exploit the people in the fashion that they claimed the previous leader that they overthrew was exploiting them. It's unbelievable, guys. That's all it's been about. That's all it's been about. So it's been about making a whole lot of money and grabbing up a whole lot of power, always under false pretexts. So with that said, let's launch into this examination of the Cold War. I'm kind of getting ahead of myself here. I'm going to do a future show on a document called The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. I open up this discussion tonight with a quote from that document. Without going into the details of it, let me just say right now that that document outlines the blueprint for this global domination system, what is called the New World Order. And anybody has any doubt about that, go read them. I'm going to do a whole show, like I said, at a, you know, at some future time in the coming weeks, on this document. I'm going to read some excerpts from it and show you how everything in this document has either already happened or is on the horizon and coming down the pike unless we stop this machine. But what's interesting is almost everything in that document had not been in existence when the document first publicly surfaced in 1905. It's claimed that the document is a forgery and, you know, somebody made it up. And look, I don't get into arguments about whether the document is a forgery. I don't need to. You don't have to. Regardless what side of the camp people fall on, everybody agrees that the document first appeared publicly in 1905. That's all you need to know. It doesn't matter if it's a forgery. Let's humor them and say it is a forgery. It doesn't matter. Because everything in that document has been systematically put into place. So even if it is a forgery, obviously the powers that be, who are pulling the strings behind the curtain, have been following this document to a T. So with that said, let me just open up reading an excerpt from this document, because it says something very interesting about what went on during the Cold War. And see if you can't see that already there's some interesting revelations here that we must take seriously, because it describes just what would happen in coming years. What I'm going to relate right now wasn't in place when this document was written, but it has since been put into place here in this country and in other countries abroad. Here's the quote. We, this is really essentially the international banking cartellers that run everything from behind the curtain, we shall arrange elections in favor of such presidents as have in their past some dark, undiscovered stain. Then they will be trustworthy agents for the accomplishment of our plans out of fear of revelations and from the natural desire of everyone who has attained power, namely, the retention of the privileges, advantages, and honor connected with the office of president. In other words, we're going to select the presidents in coming years, the leaders, prime ministers, whatever. We're going to select them. And we're going to see that they're elected because we're going to fund their campaigns. The document talks about this in more detail as you read on. Anyone's interested, just Google it. Type in the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion and read it. And tell me that that document does not describe exactly what's going on in this world and has been going on since 1905. Anyway, what they're saying here is they're boasting that we're going to select the leaders that the public will choose from in their elections, so-called. And we're going to make sure that they have dark secrets in their past. And if they don't, we're going to arrange that they do, i.e., bring them fine prostitutes to parties and get them in a back room drunk and get the woman to come on to them and without their knowledge. Film them privately, secretly, you know, with hidden cameras, and then later, should they step out of line and not cooperate with us, we'll bring the tapes forward and remind them that they'd better be compliant with what we tell them, or we're going to release these tapes. That's just one example of what this is talking about. That's just how they control politicians, guys. Of course, so many of them are so corrupt now, they don't need to bribe them anymore, but that's initially how they got them into the position that they have them now. And also, they said, you know, they'll be too desirous to maintain that position because of all the privileges that go along with it. You know, wine and dine them, give them the, you know, the big fat incomes as well as all the generous contributions under the table. That's where they really get their money from, not the so-called salary they get from the federal government. That's just a little drop in the bucket. Get them accustomed to being wined and dined and enjoying all the little sidekick benefits of being president, and therefore they won't want to go against us. They'll want to maintain that position, and they'll be, you know, obedient little puppets. The document continues, the Chamber of Deputies will provide cover for, will protect, will elect presidents, but we shall take from it the right to propose new or make changes in existing laws. For this right will be given by us to the responsible president, a puppet in our hands. They're going to work through presidents, through leaders, to pass laws that will deceive people into thinking that it's for their interests, but will really be serving our interests, because this president who passes these laws is a puppet in our hands, says the document. What do you think the Patriot Act is all about, guys? Who do you think drafted that? Whose interests does that serve? Think about it. The quote goes on, we shall invest the president with the right of declaring a state of war. Now, I can't possibly stress enough the importance of that statement. Let me repeat that. We shall invest the president with the right of declaring a state of war. You might be interested to know that the last time this government of ours got us involved in a war legally, legitimately, was World War II. We have been engaged in over 60 military conflicts, i.e. wars, since World War II, during the Cold War and now on into the so-called War on Terror, and yet not one of those instances, those military engagements, was legal. Not one of them had the constitutionally required congressional declaration of war. In every one of those instances, the president simply took it upon himself, illegally, to deploy troops and declare himself the commander-in-chief, when in reality, he's not the commander-in-chief until Congress has declared war first. Congress, again, has never done that since World War II. In all of these 60-plus military engagements, including the current two in Afghanistan and Iraq, we were involved in those conflicts absolutely illegally. Is it beginning to make sense now what this document means when it states, we shall invest the president with the right of declaring a state of war? The Constitution doesn't do that. But the powers that have hijacked our government, and indeed many other governments around the world, have themselves invested illegally the president with the power to do it. He doesn't have the legal power to do it. They simply said, do it, and he's done it, regardless what the Constitution says. And they've got the American public so dumbed down, they don't even know that the president does not have authority to do this. Anytime the president so chooses, he gets us into war, and the public just goes right along with it, not even knowing he doesn't have the power. In fact, the power is denied him. But the protocols state, we shall invest the president with the right of declaring a state of war. The president will, at our discretion, interpret the sense of the existing laws. He will further annul them when we indicate to him the necessity to do so. When pesky laws of human rights get in our way and human liberties, we'll just get the president to void them with his pen. That's exactly what Bushy Boy has been doing, guys, from day one. The document continues. Besides this, he will have the right to propose temporary laws and even new departures in the government constitutional working. The pretext both for the one and the other being the requirements for the supreme welfare of the state. Now, does that sound familiar? Who hasn't heard the term national security? Oh, they've been using that one for a long time now. They've really pushed that one, haven't they? All during the Cold War and even today, national security, national interest. That's what they hide behind all the time. People start uncovering stuff, looking under the rug, seeing what those lumps are. Oh, national security. Can't go any further. Shut up. Unbelievable. Any further questions, you'll be arrested. You're violating national security. What you're violating is their cover-up of their crimes, guys. The document continues. But such measures, we shall obtain the power... I'm sorry, by such measures, we shall obtain the power of destroying little by little, step by step, every kind of constitution. And then the time will come to turn every government into our despotism. You see, slowly, insidiously, without the public knowing what's going on, they're boasting that they would whittle away people's rights and constitutions step by step, gradually, little by little, so the public wouldn't know what's going on. In the meantime, we'll fool them through the propaganda in the media and tell them this is for their own good, or it's not really bad like you think it is, or this doesn't have anything to do with taking your rights away. It's just going to be used for the terrorists. When right in front of your face, they're using these laws all the time on American citizens, Padilla, for example, and many others, too, but that's the most commonly known case that nobody can argue. They are using it on Americans, and they intend to use these laws on all Americans very soon once they stage their next fake 9/11 that they're going to blame Iran for, so they can get you to fight Iran, and you won't be able to resist because they're going to pass a law that you've got to do whatever they say. They're going to have the draft reintroduced, and if you don't go along because of the emergency crisis situation that will be brought about by this phony fake 9/11 they're going to plan again, they'll shoot you right through the head. That's what they want, folks. That's the kind of power that they want. If you even so much as look at the Führer Zhang Wei, you will meet an early demise. That's what the Bushy boys want, because that's what their string pullers on Wall Street who manipulate and control them want. That's what the writers of this document I just read to you from wanted a long time ago. And now their children and grandchildren are reaping the benefits of these plans. They're finally getting these laws passed to the point now where the Constitution has been completely decimated. You don't have it anymore. It's gone. But let me get back now to the discussion of the Cold War, because it really sets the stage for understanding this current fraudulent war on terror. George Kennan, the State Department official who actually fathered the U.S. containment policy during the Cold War, containing the expanding Soviet Union, which of course was a fraud. They weren't expanding. It was the U.S. that was expanding, guys. But here's a statement he made, very interesting. He said, "I sometimes wonder what use there is in trying to protect the West against fancied external threats when the signs of disintegration within are so striking." Yes, well, I'll tell you why, Mr. Kennan. Because it's a great distraction, that's why. When you have the people's attention focused overseas, and you convince them to think that the real enemy is overseas, and you get them busy fighting overseas, you don't realize that the real enemy has been inside your gates the whole time. And that's what the war on terror is all about. You see, when the Cold War ended and the Iron Curtain fell, the boys in Washington were wetting their diapers profusely, trying to come up with something to replace this great excuse that they had to wage war anywhere, anytime they wanted. They needed a new boogeyman. Hell, you had Colin Powell quoted in Soldier of Fortune magazine back in 91, making that very statement. We're running out of enemies. We need a new international threat to justify the presence of our military around the world. Because, you see, if you don't have this international boogeyman to fight against, there's no need for you to maintain these billion-dollar-a-year, multi-billion-dollar-a-year military budgets, hundreds of billions, in fact, to maintain all of these bases around the world. There's no justification for your presence there. But you see, they want to keep the bases there because they can keep these countries compliant, make sure they're going along with the dictates of Wall Street and Washington, make sure that they're politically correct, i.e. kissing up, make sure that they're exploiting or allowing outside corporations to exploit their populace. What do they care about their people? Their wallets are getting fattened. But when the Cold War ended, the fun ended with it. And now what to do? We need a new enemy. So So, as I mentioned in the first two broadcasts, people like Zbigniew Brzezinski came along in his 1997 book, The Grand Chessboard, and proposed that in order to wage war in countries like Afghanistan or Eurasia, as he called it, where there was an abundance of natural gas and oil in the Caspian Sea, as well as great mineral resources in the mountains of Afghanistan, we're going to need a new Pearl Harbor-type event. Page 211 of his 97 book, The Grand Chessboard. We need to have a massive, widely perceived direct external threat, is what he said. I'm sorry, that was the PNAC document that said a new Pearl Harbor-type event. But guys, check it out. This is what they wanted. They wanted a new Pearl Harbor, according to PNAC, headed up by Rumsfeld, Cheney, Wolfowitz, Pearl, Feith, Abrams, Jeb Bush, you name it. And according to Brzezinski, a massive, widely perceived direct external threat. They needed a new boogeyman. So they created this 9/11 fiasco and then told you it was the fictitious Al-Qaeda network, which doesn't exist. If you have any doubt of that, go download the British, the BBC three-part series called The Power of Nightmares, and you'll see there's no such thing as Al-Qaeda. There's no globally coordinated network of terrorists that have training camps around the planet and actually have graduating classes every June. Oh, you gotta be kidding me. They actually come out with pictures this past June. They said a Pakistani reporter was able to get pictures of an Al-Qaeda graduating class. They had one of them on the front cover of the front page of the New York Times, and I think it was on Time Magazine's cover and a bunch of other journals. Absolutely phenomenally ridiculous. You know, if you're squinted real hard, I think you could see some of the paintbrush bristles stuck on the canvas in the back there with the backdrop, you know, the fake backdrop there of the, you know, the sandy mountains of the desert there. I mean, it's just unbelievable. CIA drones are all over the place in Afghanistan and Pakistan. And we're supposed to believe that Al-Qaeda is going to make itself visible right out in the middle of the desert having a graduating ceremony. I mean, you know, if you believe this, you've got to be the maximum dumbed down that a person can get. You can't get more stupid than that. You really can't. Never mind the CIA drones. They've got satellites that can tell what kind of underwear you put on this morning. They could have witnessed this thing and moved in on them and arrested them or whatever. You know, it's just madness that people believe this. It's a complete fairy tale, guys. Just like the Cold War. A complete, total fraud. There was never any threat of a Soviet attack. Who do you think controlled the Soviet Union? The same people that controlled Washington, for crying out loud. There was never going to be attack because they were told what they could and couldn't do, bottom line. David Rockefeller, all during the Cold War, 60s, 70s, 80s, he went and visited the Kremlin more than any other representative of any country in the world. And he wasn't a politician. He was a businessman, going back and forth to the Kremlin, telling them what they could do and could not do next. And if they didn't comply, they got the money cut off, and that was the end of them. They would have dried up and blown away in the wind. So this whole thing was being orchestrated from behind the scenes by the international banking cartels, the international corporations, and those who headed them. All for fun, for power, and for profit. Suckering people into fighting wars against countries that had not done anything to the United States, were not capable of doing anything to the United States, just like Iraq and their phony weapons of mass destruction claim. The whole thing was a scam, guys. So let me go on here, talking about the Cold War. Once you see the fraudulent nature of the Cold War, guys, you know, shame on you if you have any doubt that the war on terror is a fraud. It's the same game. CFR members, let me say this. From 1956, a panel report was produced by the it was by the Council on Foreign Relations, which I'll have more to say on that in future shows. Council on Foreign Relations, guys, is a private little club in New York run by multi-billionaires, you know, these banksters and these corporate masters. And they put together this report in 1956, which was sponsored, I might add, by none other than the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, and it was entitled Prospects for America. Here's what it had to say. It has been necessary to drum up support for United States foreign policy by stressing the imminent threats and crisis and by harping on communism. Well, there you go. See, eventually you give them enough space, they'll actually tell you what they're doing, precisely what they're doing. They'll tell you the scam that they're running. They admit it right here. To drum up support for our policies, i.e. invasions of other countries, it's been necessary to harp on communism. And by the way, the real communism has been here all along. They were pointing around the world to this country, to that country. The real communist power in the world, the real threat, has been right here. Anybody ever read Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto? Good heavens. Two of the most important planks in the manifesto are setting up a central bank and a graduating income tax. Both of those were established here in 1913. It talks about gun control. Oh, they're pushing that left and right here, aren't they? Talks about state control of education and using it as a means to propagandize the public, to make them passive, submissive, and unquestioning. Yeah. Maybe now you know why Washington has been so interested in controlling education, beginning just in 1965. That's when the real hijack of the so-called public education system took place. Pierre Mendes. He was a French executive director of the World Bank in the early post-World War II years. Once made this very interesting statement regarding the communist threat. He said, the communists are rendering a great service. Because we have a communist danger, we must keep up this indispensable communist scare. There you go. The communists are rendering a great service because we have a communist danger. We must keep up this indispensable communist scare. Folks, do you see what he's saying here? Hey, this is a good thing we got going. Wow, we're able to sucker people left and right. They have no idea. We're taking away their rights. We're creating a Gestapo regime. We're amassing all kinds of wealth in our hands, picking the public treasury. We're taking over countries. You know, France was involved working jointly with the U.S. in a lot of these operations because it was all done under the auspice of the U.N. UN plays a big role in it, so we'll be talking about that in future shows, too. But, you know, everybody was getting on the action. This is great. We can wage war anytime we want. All you have to do is say it's communism. Of course, now communism is dead in the Soviet Union, and it's not really a threat anymore, so now they're touting the war on terror. Colonel James A. Donovan made a similar statement after retiring from the U.S. Marine Corps. Notice he waits till after he retires, of course. Same thing happens today. People in government don't become critical of this administration if they don't like it because, you know, that they'll be in the unemployment line or dead. So they wait until after they retire. But here's what he said back in 1970, quote, if there were no communist bloc, the defense establishment would have to invent one. Let's take a look, guys. I'm going to go through a brief list here. Some of the countries we invaded during the Cold War, and pardon the... the length of this list, I usually don't like to have people just sit and listen to me rambling off names of countries, you know, on and on and on, but I'm doing this for a reason. I want you to see just how much we have been involved in countries around the world, just how pervasive this imperialistic endeavor has been under the guise of containing Soviet communism. We're in China from 1945 to 51, either directly bombing or rigging elections, or sabotaging the government from within through CIA operations. But in any case, interfering with foreign affairs for no other reason other than to exploit its people, steal its resources, and build bases there and turn these regions into outposts of the empire. The Marshall Islands, 1946 to 58. Philippines, 1945 to 53. And then again, in the 70s on into the 80s, Albania, 1945 to 53, and again in 1991 to 92. Eastern Europe, involved in all kinds of fiascos over there, including the Marshall Plan. That was a big fraud. Korea, 1945 to 1953. Vietnam, 1960 to 75. Guatemala, 53, and then later in the 80s. Guatemala. Why were we in Guatemala? What connection did Guatemala have with the Soviet Union? None. Laos, 64 to 73. Indonesia, 65, and in 75. Had so much fun, had to go back again. Cambodia, 69 to 75. El Salvador, 1980 to 1994. What did El Salvador have to do with the Soviet Union? Nicaragua, 1978 to 1990. Iran, 1953, overthrew Mossadegh, due to go in there again. Costa Rica, 1950s, and then again, 1970 to 71. Haiti, 1959, 1987 to 1994, and again in 2004, rigging the election over there. Ah, what fun. We like Haiti so much we went back a third time. British Guyana, 1953 to 1964. Iraq, 1958 to 63, 1972 to 75, 1991 to 2003, and again in 2003 to the present. Four times we had so much fun there. Lots of oil in Iraq, guys. That's why Iraq had to be a supporter of communism during the Cold War, and now, although everybody knows it's not, but a supporter of terrorism in the War on Terror. Whoops, there is no connection. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. Saddam was a bad boy. Then again, so was the leader of North Korea, but he could be a formidable threat. And besides, he doesn't have any oil, so he's not really worth going after. He's kind of one of us. You know, we like him. Eventually, he'll go along with us when he sees how criminal we are, and we'll give him a lot of money under the table. That'll shut him up. Soviet Union. Oh, all kinds of fiascos going on over there with the CIA. 1940s, right into the 60s. Thailand, 65 to 73. Ecuador, 1960 to 63. Congo, Zaire, 1960 to 65. And again, 77 to 78. Algeria, 1960s. Brazil, 61 to 64. Peru, 65 and again in the 90s. Dominican Republic, 1963 to 65. Cuba, 1959 to probably eternity. Ghana, 1966. Uruguay, 1969 to 72. Nobody supposes Uruguay had to do with the Soviet Union. Or Chile, for that matter. 1964, 1973. Kissinger's little overthrow of Salvador Allende. Was he in league with the Soviet Union? No. But that's the claim the gullible American people bought. South Africa, 1960s into the 1980s. Bolivia, 1964 to 75. Portugal, 74 to 76. East Timor, 75 to 99. Angola, 75 to the 80s. Jamaica, 1976. Honduras, 1980s. Are you guys getting the picture here? This goes on and on, you know. South Yemen, South Korea, Chad, Grenada, Suriname, Libya, Fiji, Panama. Oh, that's a good one, Panama. I'm going to do a show on that sometime. Oh, how lovely. Oh, what we did down there, running over cars full of family members. Cars full, there we go, of whole families, guys, with tanks. Just ran them over, crushed little infants' bodies, men, women, children, you name it. Oh, we set on fire whole blocks of houses. They went in and ordered people to leave their homes. Some did, some didn't. It didn't matter. Lit them on fire so that the survivors had nothing to go back to. Afghanistan, 1979 to 92, and again in 2001 to the present. Bulgaria, Somalia, Mexico, Colombia, Yugoslavia, and on and on and on and on and on. Do you see the havoc that we've been wreaking around the world? And who are we doing this for? Is it for national security? My American sucker friends who seem to have no problem going and fighting these wars. I hope none of my listeners fall in that category, but the American public in general, yeah, a bunch of saps, a bunch of gullible suckers. You allow your pockets to be picked. The whopping bulk of our national debt comes from the Pentagon with all these fiascos, guys. And what has it done for us except to put us in debt and cost hundreds of thousands of lives, millions really, if you add them all together. For what? To make big fat profits for Wall Street and to amass the ever-expanding global empire for the boys in Washington. That's all we've gotten out of it. A living hellish nightmare. When is this country going to wake up? And now they're doing it in the name of fighting terrorism. U.S. intervention in Nicaragua, guys, provides us with a good glimpse of how American foreign policy has worked. Just looking at that one country alone, we'll understand how we have operated all over the planet. In 1979, the Sandinistas ousted the U.S.-backed dictatorship of Anastasio Somoza. The U.S. government liked Somoza because he kept the people in line, often with brutal force, making it easy for them to be exploited. Thus, the Sandinistas were resented by Washington. They were also disliked because they sought political reform on behalf of the oppressed poor of Nicaragua. Consequently, the United States government, through the CIA, created and backed the Contras, the opposition movement to the Sandinistas. For the next 11 years, the country was torn apart, and its poverty-stricken population was driven into even worse impoverishment as the two major factions battled it out. The Sandinistas, of course, were labeled as communists in order to justify U.S. support for the Contras. Highlighting the type of horrors that the people of Nicaragua had to face during this period of relentless turmoil at the hand of the Contras, David Womble wrote in his book, The CIA in Nicaragua, this interesting statement. He said, Witness for Peace, an American Protestant watchdog body, collected a list of Contra atrocities in 1 year, which include, and brace yourself, this isn't pretty, if you've got kids in the room, might want to have them taken out, which include murder, the rape of two girls in their homes, torture of men, maiming of children, cutting off arms, cutting out tongues, gouging out eyes, castration, bayoneting, pregnant women in their stomach, amputating the genitals of people of both sexes, scraping the skin off of the face, pouring acid on the face, breaking the toes and fingers of an 18-year-old boy, and summary executions. These were the people that Ronald Reagan called the freedom fighters and the moral equivalent of our founding fathers. Doesn't that make you proud to be an American? And here we are talking about the evils of Saddam Hussein. The hypocrisy makes me vomit. This is just one instance, one country, guys. We did it in dozens of countries all over the planet, all during the Cold War. And now here we are doing it, and who can deny? We're openly engaging in torture. It used to be something that was shameful and denied. Now they're not only admitting doing it, they're telling you that they have the legal precedent to do it. Mr. Gonzalez says it's okay because he's the president and in the war on terror, he can do this. It was bad when Mr. Hitler did it, but Bush can do it and it's okay. Sure, it's okay. Let's talk about the school of the Americas, shall we? Our government, with our tax dollars, has been training South American rebel forces, guys, in terrorism tactics for decades through what was called the School of the Americas, SOA, located at Fort Benning, Georgia. In 2000, this training camp changed its name to the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, or WISC, in a lame attempt to try to improve its image and avoid a congressional order to shut it down. But, of course, its function has never changed. It still continues to train guerrillas and terrorism tactics and sabotage. In his book, Sorrows of Empire, Chalmers Johnson had this to say, and I'll probably get him on this show sometime. I've interviewed him on some other shows I've done. Interesting guy. He said, over the years, it has trained the School of the Americas, has trained over 60,000 Latin American military and police officers, significant numbers of whom have been implicated in cases of torture, rape, massacre, and assassination. Among them was Roberto de Abusan, the leader of El Salvador's right-wing death squads. Lower-level SOA graduates have participated in human rights abuses that include the March 24, 1980 assassination of El Salvador's Archbishop Oscar Romero, in which the CIA may also have been involved, that's no surprise, and the December 1981 El Mazot massacre of 900 Salvadorian civilians. As of late 2002, civilian war-torn Colombia, the Colombian army, includes some 10,000 SOA/WISC graduates. 10,000 of them in Colombia's army alone. again, all trained in torture and other incredibly illegal activities. Now back to our discussion of Nicaragua. The U.S.-induced chaos that broke out in Nicaragua, beginning immediately after the ousting of Somoza, was so bad that even Somoza himself came to the conclusion that the U.S. government had very sinister motives behind its involvement in his country. After much diligent research, he concluded that the United States was being controlled by powerful, corrupt forces which were destroying it from within and using it to destroy other nations. In 1980, he authored a book called Nicaragua Betrayed, in which he stated, check this out, guys, "No longer can we afford the luxury of silence. The people of the United States and the free world must know what is happening, events that sooner or later will affect them. With my years of experience in government and my military training and background, with my close association with governmental leaders throughout the world, and with intelligence information, I come to one startling conclusion. There is a planned and deliberate conspiracy in the United States of America to destroy that republican form of government, the capitalistic free enterprise system that made the United States the productive wonder of the world is undergoing radical surgery." And he's absolutely right. Just look at the emerging North American Union. They want to bring us down to third world status, guys, and as long as we continue to... they're going to gloriously succeed. They're not far away from it. The dollar is poised to collapse any day. It keeps dropping against the euro, against the Canadian dollar. It's even dropping against the Mexican peso, for crying out loud. Oh, but it's just an accident. Sure it is. Somoza was murdered, guys, a few weeks after that book came out, by the way. I just thought I'd let you know that. All an accident, all a coincidence, of course, not related to his book. A similar statement to Somoza's was made by Senator Joseph McCarthy years earlier, guys, regardless what you think of McCarthy. Listen to this amazing statement. It's very true. He said, "How can we account for our present situation unless we believe that men high in government are concerting or collaborating or conspiring to deliver us to disaster? This must be the product of a great conspiracy, a conspiracy on a scale so immense as to dwarf any previous such venture in the history of man, a conspiracy of infamy so black that when it is finally exposed, its principles shall be forever deserving of the maledictions of all honest men." He went on to say, referring to our foreign and domestic policies of the day, and indeed of today, he says, "What can be made of this unbroken series of decisions and acts contributing to the strategy of defeat? They cannot be attributed to incompetence. The laws of probability would dictate that part of the decisions would serve this country's interests." In other words, there's no way that every single law they keep coming out with could be going against us if this was all by chance, if it wasn't a conspiracy. The fact that everything is working counter to our interests and only in the interest of big money obviously is a conspiracy. Yes, it is. Let's not forget, again, when George Kennan said, you know, we're so concerned overseas. How can that be, though, when we have so much problems right from within? That's part of the distraction technique. January 9th, 1985, London Guardian quoted former CIA analyst David McMichael, who told the story of why the U.S. had become so involved with Nicaragua. Here's what he said. "We have control and we don't want to lose it. The ideology of anti-communism provides the rationalization." Very similar to other statements we've looked at tonight. In other words, the Cold War is a fraud. All they've ever been interested in is grabbing power, is getting control. And that's all the war on terror is, folks. Wide open borders. While they say that we're going to be attacked at any day now, think about it. It's a fraud. You've been sold a rotten bag of lemons. In fact, you've been sold a rotten bag of lemons for a very long time now. Isn't it shamefully disgusting? Isn't it a horrific embarrassment that the American people have had the wool pulled over them for so long and have not been capable of waking up? I mean, a lot of people, you try to wake them up, they actually get angry with you. They'll argue with you. Is it really that they're that stupid, or do they just not want to face reality? In either case, they're still incredibly gullible, aren't they? To think that sitting back and doing nothing, maybe this is going to go away? Oh, we've gone way beyond the point now where we can afford to treat politics like a spectator sport, folks. We have got to get involved and fast, because if we don't, this country is going to go down, and we're going to find ourselves living in the most despotic, hellish system of tyranny the planet's ever known, and there will be no escaping from it once it's fully in place. If you've got any hopes of stopping it, it's got to be done now. And let's hope through a peaceful means. You know what I would like to see happen, folks? I'd like to see a massive nationwide orchestrated strike where everybody, or mostly everybody, absolutely does not go to work, refuses to go, and you know, it wouldn't take long either for that to have a real potent effect. You'd have these corporate scoundrels and these political whores begging on their hands and knees because their whole system would shut down in an instant. All of their plans would come to a grinding halt. The whole thing would fall apart. Do you realize the power that we have over these scumbags? We've got them outnumbered 10 million to 1. It's just getting these hay-chomping cattle to wake out of their slumber. That's all it takes. They're afraid of us, folks. Don't be afraid of them. They want that. The truth is, they're far more afraid of you than you are of them. They know they're outnumbered. They can't contain the whole population if it was to rise up overnight. That's why they go through so much trouble, to make sure that you're fooled through the media. If they weren't afraid of you, they wouldn't care about lying to you now, would they? They would come right out and say, "Ha, you saps! We fooled you. We staged the whole 9/11 attack thing. Ha, 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 ha. Look at all the money we made, all the power we grabbed." No, they're not going to do that. Not now, anyway. Because their power structure isn't fully in place yet. There's time, folks, to stop it. But it's up to you and I to do it. Nobody in Congress is going to do it. Certainly no one in Congress that has enough power. There's only a few in Congress that know what's going on and don't like it. But the whopping majority are in it. They're part of it, folks. Their hands are stained with blood like everybody else's in this rotten, stenching system. Besides, they don't care about passing legislation that takes your rights away. It doesn't affect them. Selective law enforcement. It only affects you, so what do they care? The only people who can stop this and will stop this are the ones who are being affected by it. Again, you and I. Edward Herman, in his book Beyond Hypocrisy, Decoding the News in an Age of Propaganda, had this to say: U.S. policies divested the Nicaraguan economy and were certainly the primary contributor to a fall in the per capita income of over 50% between 1980 and 1990. It seems obvious, therefore, that the United States had purposefully tilted the playing field in a direction unfavorable to the ruling party. It's all a rigged game, guys. They've got experts who have entire panels assembled to sit down and plan these events before they unfold. How can we take this country down? How can we overthrow its government? What mechanisms? Wait till I talk about how we took over Panama in 1989. Your jaw will drop in amazement what went on down there. You see, Panama was one of the real test runs for what they plan to do here one day. They had a national state of emergency down there, and they clamped down on them with a vengeance, taking control of everything. Everything. The hospitals, the police departments, the fire departments, the media, the educational establishment, everything. No news reached the public except our military did not have control over it. That's a dry one for what they're going to do here, guys, when they stage their next fake terrorist attack, unless we can wake up and stop them in time. Another quote here, Mark Weisbrot, in What Everyone Should Know About Nicaragua, had this to say: by 1990, the Nicaraguans had suffered more than they could take from the war and economic embargo. So, when President George Bush Sr. made it clear that their misery would continue until the Sandinistas were voted out of office, a majority cried, "Uncle." United States waged war against the people of Nicaragua, to psychologically conditioning them by driving them even into more desperate poverty. And that's what they did to the people of Panama in 1989. What they've been doing to the people in Iraq ever since the 1950s. What they're doing to the people in Afghanistan right now. It's a living hell over there, folks. They're afraid of the drug lords who have taken complete control of the country, all with U.S. support. That's one of the reasons. Another one of the reasons they wanted to go in there, to get back the opium trade business, because that's where the CIA has gotten the bulk of its funds for its covert operations through the years. Taliban had outlawed it. Anyway, guys, that's all the time we got for today. I got a lot more to say on this, and we'll have to pick it up, I guess, next week. We'll do part two of this. Again, if you have any doubt the Cold War is a fraud, stick with us next week. I'll rip the lid off it even more, and then you'll see what a fraud the war on terror is. In the meantime, have a great week, folks, and in spite of the hell going on in this country, look up and be glad that they can't fool you anymore, because now you know the truth, even though the truth hurts. We'll see you next week, folks.